Hi, everyone. This is Mike Lipkin, and I'm here with my co-author, Dr. Diane McIntosh, of this extraordinary book, even if I say so myself, called You Belong Here, How to Make People Feel Safe to Be Their Best, Take Bold Risks, and Win. And today we're going to talk about a key topic from the book called 7 Steps to Building the Future. And in the book, we talk about owning your power, understanding the control and the influence you have over your life. And as the saying goes, the best way to predict the future is to help create it. And right up front, we identify one of the key barriers to building the future, and that is a simple word that is also a scary word for many of us, but it's one that we indulge in every day. It's called procrastination. And the dictionary defines procrastination as the act of intentionally and unnecessarily putting off a task that should be completed. And so today we're going to talk about how do you actually cut through procrastination, take action, and then we'll walk you through 7 steps to building the future. Now, if I can ask you, Diane, just share with us, you know, some of the reasons why people procrastinate, because I know that as a psychiatrist, there are certain disorders that predispose people towards procrastination. But even for those folks who may not suffer from those disorders, procrastination can be a state of mind, especially if someone hasn't done the hard work to break through that. So just your thoughts around procrastination, what it is, who suffers from it, and maybe a way to break through it before we get into our steps to building the future.
Sure. Well, Mike, you said it's a simple word. I think it's a hard word, procrastination. It's also part of executive functioning. And previously we talked about and certainly mentioned in the book about the prefrontal cortex, which is the executive of your brain, the part of your brain that thinks ahead, that critically thinks, that organizes and plans. So when you procrastinate or intentionally or unnecessarily put off top tasks that should be completed, you obviously do not have a highly functioning prefrontal cortex, because if you think ahead and critically think, you'll know, I got to do this. But people who procrastinate don't. So, of course, that means young people, because your prefrontal cortex, on average, isn't fully formed till you're 25. So if you think about your children, really young people, up to into their teens and into their early 20s, procrastination is ubiquitous. That's another difficult word. Everybody procrastinates, but as people mature, they are less and less likely to procrastinate. So it is a brain function and it's executive functioning. People procrastinate when they don't think or give enough weight to the outcome that might happen. It's also associated with a lot of disorders, ADHD particularly. So attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which is one of the most heritable psychiatric disorders, and it's real. It persists into adulthood. So lots of adults who have ADHD that's not been recognized and treated also struggle with procrastination because of how their prefrontal cortex functions.
Mm-hmm. So that takes me to one of my favorite lines in the book, even if I say so myself, and I think it was your
idea. Did you write it or did I?
Well, it's a joint process.
That is true.
And in fact, the two of us, as far as the book is concerned, are joined at the hip here, Diane, but here it is. And I'm curious to get your spontaneous response. And by the way, to anyone who's watching or listening, one of the ways Diane and I break through procrastination is we don't overthink something before we do it. We go, oh, it's a good idea, let's do it. And if it's even 70% of where we want it to be, that's still going to be phenomenal quality and appropriate to share. So here's the line, Diane. Self-stimulating dopamine is the ultimate fuel of success. So just talk to us about dopamine and how you can self-stimulate it.
So dopamine is one of many of the brain chemicals that is very important in our functioning in everyday life. It has an impact in depression and anxiety, not as much as serotonin or norepinephrine. But what we often talk about when we talk about dopamine, particularly in You Belong Here, is its impact on your pleasure center, your nucleus accumbens, the part of your brain that is important for rewarding that you get a dopamine hit when you win, when you're experiencing pleasure, when you're doing something that really is important to you and it works out. And so when you're trying to do something that's difficult, you're wanting to be able to celebrate those successes along the way because you want to get those little dopamine hits that come along with success. And you can actually train your brain. That's all about rewiring your brain that happens the more and more you practice things to make sure that you stop and smell the flowers and celebrate those small successes. And that actually gives yourself a little hit of dopamine, but also the people that are around you who are on that journey with you.
So good. And so we're going to get straight into how you self-stimulate that dopamine by going through these 7 steps to building the future. And the first one is focus on achieving the best outcome. And so when Diane started this journey, and it took us about 18 months to create this book, there were moments where I invented a whole nother level of procrastination because it was so hard. But the way I got over that procrastination is I focused on the outcome and I experienced the pleasure of the book in advance. I imagined holding it. I imagined smelling it because new books have got such a great smell. I imagined getting kudos for it. I imagined the impact it was going to have. And so the anticipation of the pleasure provided me with the dopamine to break through the procrastination. So that is the first step in terms of focus on achieving the best outcome. Number 2, Diane and I then mapped out the steps to reaching our destination before we even knew what the steps were. So we decided to focus on the outcome. And as Stephen Covey's habit number 2 said, you know, begin with the end in mind. And then we identified the steps as we went along. So if you can, Diane, just share with us the importance of being able to identify just the next step, not having all the steps that are required to complete the journey, but knowing what the next step will be.
Well, I never really thought about that new book smell. I always like the new car smell, but now I'm going to incorporate that. And this actually I learned from treating patients, working with my patients, and the fact that when you have a big task to overcome, patients who struggle with hoarding, with serious procrastination, and really learning that in order to overcome a difficult challenge, you have to take little steps, little bites of that problem. But the way that you look at the whole problem just in one big picture is to break it down into those little steps. So you know, okay, I want to end up here. This is what it's going to feel like, and exploring what it will feel like once you get there. But then say your journey there is step by step, and you have to celebrate each time you hit one of those steps because it is a long journey sometimes to get to where you want to go. If you don't break it down, it feels overwhelming and people will put it to the side.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. So, you know, when I had this idea for the book, and I just knew based on all the trends that I study that the sense of belonging, giving people a sense of community, giving people the strength that comes from having a village around you is a very appropriate theme. And so I thought, okay, I want to write the book and I want to do it with Diane. So what's step 1? Call Diane. And then Diane agreed to do it. And then what's step 2? Well, find a publisher. So we called our publisher, Page 2. Then what's step 3? Well, set up weekly conversations with Diane. Then what's step 4? Transcribe each conversation and finesse the final words with Diane. And on it went until the book came out. And now, by the way, we're starting the next part of the journey, which is how do we turn the book into a global bestseller? And I'm already anticipating that in advance. As I'm talking to you, Diane, I am self-stimulating dopamine.
I see this.
Exactly. All right. Now, number 3 is then build the team. So find the folks who will push or pull you into your desired future state. So Diane's part of my team. Page 2, a publisher, is part of the team. My EA Liv is part of the team. My wife is part of the team. My colleagues at Environics are part of the team. All the other people who we canvassed and who contributed to the book are part of the team. And Diane, I know that for you specifically, building that team, creating that team, leading that team is a key part of your leadership mindset. So just talk to us a little bit about your point of view as it regards to building a team and the role the team plays in helping you achieve your desired future.
Well, you're right. And you really spoke to that earlier with talking about Page 2, the publisher, having our colleagues who help us to manage our calendars, make sure that we stick to all of the promises that we make to each other. For me, in the technology that I'm building Rapids, my team is everything, because I only know about psychiatry. I know about the science side of things, but I have to have experts who know how to build technology, and I have to trust them. I have to have the right people around me who are really drivers, because when you're doing a startup, you have to have people who can drive their particular area of expertise. Having someone who may be brilliant but doesn't drive towards an outcome won't work in a technology. And I know, Mike, I jumped ahead to celebrating every win prior to that, which is our number 4. I want to sort of add to that a little bit, that the size doesn't count, big wins, small wins. But also what I found is that even when you face a barrier, you hit some criticism, you get negative feedback, being able to shift that into a win. What did I learn from that? What was the opportunity that came from there? Obviously, you don't want to be screamed at or berated, which should not ever happen in a team where people are going to feel like they belong and can take risks. But even when something negative happens, being able to turn that into an opportunity to find that solution that you wouldn't have been driving towards had you not known about it, and it could take you down a rabbit hole where you don't want to be. So I just wanted to elaborate on number 4 before you move on to 5.
No, that's perfect. So celebrate your win. Size doesn't count. That's step number 4. Diane, you've articulated it, I think, really skillfully. The only thing I would add there is when I achieve the win, and if it's a big win, that means like we did the other day, we sold 200 books to a large organization, or if you and I win a gig together and that's worth thousands of dollars, that's a big win. But even a small win, like making this podcast happen, which is not such a small win, by the way, means that I now get to treat myself. So every time there's a win, I'm going to condition myself to look forward to something. So for me, the treat is I'll take my wife for a great sushi dinner this evening because I'm celebrating the win. So it's always having something to look forward to and getting into the habit of celebrating the win, no matter how small. Now, number 5 is a crucial one. And this is one that I haven't always been able to execute successfully. And that is confront your negative thoughts, that monkey chatter, the voice of doubt that is telling you, who are you kidding? You're not up to this. It's going to defeat you. It's going to be a disaster. You're going to fail. People are finally going to discover how stupid you really are. And this is why, Diane, it's been such a great ride for me to be with you, because as we've had our conversations, I felt sometimes as though you were my psychiatrist and you spoke me through the negative thoughts. And I am very proud that even I managed to talk you out of some of your negative thoughts and reverse those roles. So just talk to us a little bit about how do you, in fact, take on those negative thoughts or that monkey chatter that might be getting in the way of you moving forward?
That is actually the very essence of what cognitive behavioral therapy is, or CBT. It has the most scientific evidence as a talk therapy if you're dealing with depression or anxiety. And what it at its core is identifying negative thoughts that are impacting how you think and behave, and really confronting those thoughts. But you have to practice confronting those thoughts. What's the evidence? Okay, first of all, it's identifying I have those thoughts and acknowledging that they exist, and then confronting them. What is the reality behind that thought? And most of the time, those negative thoughts have no reality. They're just you kind of being mean to yourself. And then practicing when you have those thoughts, identifying them and confronting them, which is really hard in the beginning. That's why going to therapy is hard work. Eventually, the more and more you confront them and with the truth of the matter, the less and less they happen. And that's the idea behind CBT, is that you identify them, you confront them, you practice confronting them, and eventually they go away. That is what is so important about those kind of negative thoughts, is that they're automatic. And sometimes we don't even recognize we're doing them. And they really actually change the trajectory of our life, because they start to influence what we do. Mm-hmm. It is a kind of resilience. It's part of building resilience, is actually identifying your self-talk and shifting it to more of a, you are actually a strong person. Yes, we all have our ups and downs. We all have our challenges, but I've continued to soldier through. Changing those thoughts actually changes the trajectory of your life, but it's not easy. It's work.
So good. And, you know, I think you shared with me, and I think it's an old Nova Scotian proverb, let them in the front door, let them out the back door, but do not serve them tea.
it's a mindfulness, actually, a statement of letting those negative thoughts, which we all have. We all have worries. We all have negative thoughts. Letting them in, letting them out the back door, but not serving them tea, meaning don't let them sit inside you and ruminate on them. You have to accept that they exist. You have to let them go through you. They're real, but don't ruminate. And sometimes, you know, it's easy to say that. Sometimes you need help. Sometimes you need to talk to a therapist to actually help you let them out the back door. It'll take a while in the beginning. You give them a little bit of tea. Before you know it, you're throwing the tea bags after them. Out you go, and you're not sitting there in them anymore. But beautiful. It is work again. Therapy is hard.
Therapy is hard. Life is hard. And that's why you used a word over and over again, and that is practice. Practice. And, you know, the dictionary defines the word practice as a systematized method for achieving consistent results. And so by practicing, by being aware, you get better and better at overcoming those negative thoughts and breaking through whatever is getting in the way. All right. Step number six is, no matter how effective you are, no matter how strong you are, no matter how great the people are that you're having conversations with, you're going to have the breakdown. Stuff happens. And so, as we say in the book, dopamine depletion is inevitable, especially when the task is Herculean. There are going to be moments where even the strongest among us are brought to our knees. And that's when we need the social interaction with people who care. That's when we need to have people there who can lift us up, because we have lifted them up. And so when one finds oneself going through the breakdown, and I talk from experience, I keep four words in my head at all times, and that is, this too shall pass. So in good times, prepare for bad. In bad times, prepare for good. But the breakdown is not the end of the journey. It's just another milestone one needs to go through. So I'm curious, Diane, from a psychiatric standpoint, how you handle yourself, how you focus on the next step when you least able to do so, because you are going through that breakdown.
There's so much to unpack there, Mike. It's why your team is so important. So I know that we lift each other up on my team. You and I lift each other up on our little team here when we're feeling like this is rough. When we were writing the book and trying to get to those next steps, my family, our friends, you know, there's so many other people in our lives that can help to lift us through difficult times. But also part of resilience is being able to lift yourself up through those things by getting out the door and moving, and even 30 minutes a day of getting your heart rate up increases BDNF, that brain-derived neurotrophic factor, gets your brain cells growing, gets them activated, helps you to get through those difficult times. And so that's part of it, is using the people around you and actually building your resilience of pushing through. Remember, resilience is not just surviving a bad situation, it's getting through with greater strength. And that requires effort and practice. The other part of that number six, though, is not focusing on expectation of failure all the time. Oh my gosh, this could happen, this could happen. It's an awareness that things do happen. And unfortunately, they happen a lot when you're in a startup. Things constantly happen. But I always have to think about, okay, this happened. What's the solution? What do I learn from this? How do I take a next step? How do I make my way around it? And also building up my own internal resources, because things happen. That's the reality of life. I don't want to be over-focused on the expectation a bad thing is going to happen, but I want to be prepared that it might and how I'm going to find my way around it.
Mm-hmm. Love it. So the final step then is keep the faith. And we said that the science tells us that people with a systematized belief are better able to master their difficulties. So if you are a person of faith, then you have this built-in system of resilience and tenacity and stick-to-itiveness. If, like me, you are not a person of formalized religion, you got to find sources of your faith. And so for me now, Diane, as someone who's lost his faith in the past, I just keep focusing on the miracle of being able to do what we're doing, the experience that I've had when I've confronted similar challenges and got through it in the past. And so I have a little quote inside of me that I keep drawing off, and it is, what lies behind us and what lies in front of us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. And so as we break through, as we get to the next level, I like what you just said, we then build our confidence, we build our muscle, and we are then in a better place to rise to the next challenge. So Diane, just your comment on keeping the faith.
You are the king of the quote. That's all I'm going to say. You always have the perfect quote. To, you know, we know, science tells us that people who have a religious faith actually do better when they're trying to recover from whether it's a physical or mental health challenge. Faith does help people to recover, to be strong. But you don't have to have a religious faith. A faith in yourself, in the people that are around you, that is sustaining. And if you're really struggling, you can lose faith, you can lose hope, you can feel hopeless, worthless, useless. And that's when your circle, the people that are around you, are really, really important. And obviously, sometimes you include a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a therapist in there, a professional coach in there, helping to support you through that process. Feeling alone, feeling isolated, really builds that hopelessness, and it fuels that hopelessness. And so staying connected, reaching out, knowing that you're not alone by those social and professional connections really is sustaining and helps you to maintain your faith and be successful.
Beautiful. So that's what this podcast has been about. The 7 steps to building the future. Focus on achieving the best outcome. Map out the steps required to reach your destination. Build your team. Celebrate your wins. Size doesn't count. Confront your negative thoughts, prepare for the breakdown, and keep the faith. Diane, I feel always really lucky and energized after a conversation with you. Hopefully, our viewers or listeners feel the same. And I look forward to the next one. And I believe you're about to take a great trip this evening with your loved ones. So bon voyage.
Thank you, Mike. Always a pleasure. Very grateful for you.
Perfect.